Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, September 26, 2014, and with me today, I have the man with the soapbox, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I am doing well.
Awesome. And then I also have the man with our uber in-depth tech knowledge, Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back.
Awesome. And it's great to have you back. And Dave, I thought you would like to know that I got a comment from one of our listeners, Terry, and he said that we took yesterday's discussion about shell shock all the way up to the edge of his ability to follow along, but didn't cross over. And because of the information that you and John provided, that his computer is now safe. So he's
hey, sweet.
Thank you.
That's great. Yeah, and we should link to the instructions at shellshocker.net unless we're going to post an article about them as well. But there's an easy way to update Bash if you have Homebrew installed. And installing Homebrew on your Mac is literally a one-line process. So there you go.
Well, we will have a link to that. So
perfect.
Awesome. Okay. The first thing I wanted to dive into today is a piece that Brian wrote yesterday that I really enjoyed. And this was his take on the whole thing with the FBI being upset that Apple has set up iOS so that it's protected, in a manner of speaking. In that,
well, really, he's tense about Apple promoting it as being safe even from government searches. That's right. Really what he's thinking about. I mean, I guess he's probably – we're talking about James Comey, the FBI director. And it may be also safe to say that he's tense that it's protected in the first place. But the thing that he was going on about was he was just perplexed that Silicon Valley would start arguing or start promoting its products as – putting people above the law from his perspective.
Which I find to be fascinating because protecting your own privacy from not only the people in your community, but from your government does not seem like going above the law to me. That seems like an inherent right we have protected by the Constitution of the United States.
Well, to be
fair,
that's
just nitpicking.
and to be fair, Apple is saying that even if we were to get a government warrant, we could not decrypt your data.
Right,
and because it's just technically impossible.
It's technically impossible.
It's not that
impossible.
We won't. We have made it technically impossible, and that's the issue.
Right,
they've made it technically impossible.
I think that's actually a good thing. Because what Apple is saying is, look, we don't care what data you have. It's none of our business. We're not keeping it. And even if we can get at it, we can't figure out what it is.
And you know,
I like that.
I know. Sorry, Jeff. I know you want to say something, Brian. But I want to draw the analogy out. It's not like Apple went out of their way to keep the government out. And that's what the government's upset about or this guy's upset about. He's upset that Apple didn't go out of their way to build in a backdoor for the government to get at this data. That's a distinction. It's an important
and that's what just set me off on massive tilt thinking about this and turned into the rant that we published yesterday. The FBI, law enforcement in general, and certainly the NSA have only themselves to blame for this. They, first of all, obviously have the expectation that they have a right to our data, not just the ability to access it with a warrant, but the right to our data, period. And on top of that, U.S. law enforcement in general, and certain, again, coming back to the NSA, have so abused their ability to get data, confusing what they can do with what they should do, that it is Apple doing this is a direct response to all that. I mean, it's like there's zero shock that Silicon Valley would take matters into their own hands, in part because this is hurting U.S. tech companies around the world.
Right. So let me ask a question here. I don't know this particular nuance of the law, but let's say I bought a safe, right? And I stored things in the safe that I wanted to keep safe. And I was the only one, in theory, that knew the combination to that safe. And now the government decides that there's something in that safe that would incriminate me. I don't believe, but I may be wrong, but I don't believe that they can force me to open that safe if I'm the only one with the keys, because we have the Fifth Amendment, right?
They can get a warrant and a court order to compel you to open the safe.
Okay.
But they have to present their case to a judge, and it needs to be a good, strong case. Well, in theory, it needs to be a good, strong case. But they can't just walk up to you and say, Dave, unlock the safe. And they can't turn around and go back to the company that made the safe and said, unlock Dave's safe.
Right. So there's no difference here between
what all of which, by the way, is fine, is good.
Right.
Right. This is all part of due process.
Right. But so what's the difference then if I called it a safe, but really it's my iPhone, and really I'm the only one that knows the password to it, and really no one else can get in without my password. What's the difference?
Exactly.
Why is this a problem when it's my iPhone versus a physical safe that we've had for hundreds of years?
Well, the difference is, of course, that you're actually more likely to have something of use on the iPhone, and the law enforcement wants it.
I mean, or is it that law enforcement feels like, okay, we can compel Mr. Hamilton to open his safe, but we can't force him to. However, we can take his safe and we can drill into that thing. We feel confident that we can get in there if a judge says that we have the right to to damage the thing to get in there. Whereas with most encryption, and certainly not all, but most, that's not possible. You can beat at it all you want, and unless you happen to get really lucky, you're not going to get in.
That's
right.
True.
And looking at the other side of this, the repercussions of what Apple is doing is that there will be bad guys and bad girls with devices that have information on them that could solve a crime, prevent a crime, prevent a terrorist attack, solve a terrorist attack, whatever. There are things that could be done with information that will be on bad people's smart devices. This is absolutely true, but this is a risk of living in a free society.
And it's a risk that I am totally comfortable with. This, to me, would be
semi-free.
There you go.
Fair enough.
To me, this would be akin to the government compelling Schlage to make a master key for every lock that they create, so that they can just go into anyone's house at any time and look through everything, because that would be a great place to keep evidence and materials used in terrorist activities.
Well, that's the practical. The flip side of all this is that Mr. Comey, at least right by his actions, seems to be ignorant or perhaps willfully avoiding the reality that if Apple or the government can get into our iPhones, so can the bad guys. So can the hackers.
And that's a really good point.
You can't have both ways. And in the meanwhile, you've got China. China has yet to give Apple permission to sell the iPhone 6 in China. Apple, back in the summer, was saying that iPhones represented a security threat because of, was it recently traveled? Most featured, one of the GPS tracking features. your frequent locations. That's it. It was completely ridiculous. But the point is that Russia has also demanded the source code from OS X to iOS to look for evidence of spying. You know, Apple and the other tech companies are increasingly a pawn of international diplomacy and international economic warfare. And this is, Apple doing this thing with iOS 8 is very much a defensive play to keep iPhones in places like Russia and China.
And to me, it's also a great, I don't want to call it a marketing move, but in a sense it is. Because
It totally is.
Yeah, knowing that I can buy a device from Apple that is essentially locked down to a point where I'm the only person that can get at the information that's on it is a very compelling purchase point for me. If I was in the market today and wasn't sure what kind of smartphone to buy, and I could look at an iPhone and an Android phone, and they were comparable across the board for features, but then someone said, oh, and by the way, Apple has set this up so they don't have any of your data, and it's encrypted, and no one else can get at it, but that's not available on this Android phone. The price difference no longer matters to me. It becomes the iPhone for that privacy and security.
It's true, although there are some things, at the very least, that Google and or handset makers could do to try to match Apple in this. But I think that Apple's always going to have the edge because it controls the hardware and the software.
Well, and then Apple has the added bonus of they don't care what our data is. That's not a revenue vector for them like it is for Google.
Yeah.
All right. So knowing full well, we could go on for a really long time talking about this. I'm going to cut us off anyhow, because Dave, there's another thing that I've wanted to get to like all week and haven't been able to because of all this other news. And this is the thing that you wrote a few days ago about family sharing in iOS 8. And I really liked the explanation you gave for how to set this up effectively. So I thought we could dive into that real quick before we have to wrap up.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, family sharing is an interesting concept because it solves the longstanding problem of multiple people wanting to share apps that they've purchased. And there was always a way to work around it, and the way was for you to set up a different iCloud account or Apple ID that you only use to purchase apps. And the reason you want to set up a different one is because you had to give everyone in your family access to this ID, username and password, in order for them to do updates or download new apps. And while you could do that with your main Apple ID, you rarely wanted to. So that's how that worked, and it worked out just fine. But it was always sort of clunky because you couldn't control what the kids were doing, and it was always a little funky. So Apple came up with family sharing, which allows you to have multiple people sharing the apps they've all purchased. Anything purchased prior to them joining the family share group is actually fair game. I say anything, most things that have been updated within about the last, I think, year. There was a change to Apple's terms of service where you basically, as a developer, agreed and said, "Yeah, we'll allow this to happen with our updates," and then that works. It works fine. Where you have an issue is when your main Apple ID is not the same one that you use to purchase apps, which certainly for at least one person on the account was true in most previous cases, because you had to separate this ID out. When you set up family sharing, you assign it to your iCloud ID, not your store ID. And that's where this confusion comes in. Thankfully, Apple thought about this. They just didn't put a whole lot into the UI to explain it well. And so the trick is just set it up, and it'll probably just work. Because during the setup process, once you go forward and say, yeah, I want to assign it to my iCloud ID, even if that's not one you've ever purchased something with, you say, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway, Then it says, what ID do you want to use for your store purchases? Which store purchases do you want to inherit into this? And then you choose the other one. And if you had it in your store before, it usually inherits that account ID, and it works just great. And it works fine. So it's been an interesting thing, but mostly good. I ran into an issue last night, and I'm still waiting for clarification from Apple on this. I have about $100 worth of credit on my account, which I made the main account on our family share group. My son bought an app last night, and near as I can tell, it did not count against our credit, which means I think it was charged to my credit card, which is stupid, because if I've got $100 worth of credit, I want all the purchases to go against that, not just mine.
Have you tried making a purchase to see if it goes against the credit?
Yes, and it does.
All right, then that does... at least to a degree indicate that, yeah, maybe that credit is bound just to your account and not to the entire family account.
Right. Yeah, which would be stupid if you ask me, and I'm not sure if you did or not, but that would be my answer. So we'll find out. Hopefully there's a workaround for that.
All right. Well, when we know more, we'll pass that info on to our listeners.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. So, Brian, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
And Dave, thank you for being such a trooper and coming back again and again this week.
My pleasure. I'm going to be out of pocket going to PepCom on Monday and Tuesday, so I will listen during my travels.
All right. Well, we will wave to you during the show. And thanks again, and everyone have an awesome weekend.
You too.